morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Here we are. Another edition of Democratic Perspective, and we got a little different one today, a little special. And I don't think anybody's going to be too brokenhearted to leave the politics alone for a little while. Not that we're actually going to do that, but we're going to certainly maybe focus on some other things. We got a very special guest today, certainly very special to a lot of people and to me also. Zane Kelpe, Dr. Zane Kelpe is with us. I'm going to give him this introduction, and I find it almost hard to believe my. I mean, he's all over. This is great. We're talking. He's from London. You'll notice that right away if I ever let him speak. He's from London. They still keep it in the United Kingdom, I believe. He's works at the University of Arizona College of Medicine. He was an assistant attending cardiac surgery at Columbia University. He was a cardiac fellow at Brigham and Young and Women's Hospital. He was a clinical fellow in general surgery and cardiac surgery at Harvard Med School, and then a fellow at the Mayo Clinic. That's like good morning, Zane Kelpe. That's like all of them, is there? That's pretty good.
Morning. No, it's absolutely fine. I was in London, but met this amazing French girl when I was here finishing off my PhD, and that's why I stayed.
Well, congratulations. So I want to talk about. We want to talk about what you do, and I'm going to do a little. I'm going to do my little full disclosure, maybe a little up front. You do amazing things down there at the College of Medicine with hearts. The College of Medicine of the University of Arizona. A Banner Hospital. I mean, it's got kind of a long a transitional title, I guess. It has the only approved, FDA-approved artificial heart in the world. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And that's the reason why I'm here. I'm the director of that artificial heart department and also of mechanical support and acute devices such as ECMO. There is another one. There's a French one, even though my wife's French, I can say that.
There you go.
And it's still in trials. And there's a lot of moving pieces, but it's made or funded by Airbus. And, lots of people all over the world have tried to create artificial hearts. But this one and where we're at in Arizona has, because of the Jack Copeland legacy and also Francisco Arabia, who was his seed at Cedars-Sinai now. And, there is a small group of people in France and Germany who are using this total artificial heart, and it's made by Syncardia.
Well, that's what we want to talk about today in part, certainly, is what, I mean, we're taking a complicated subject, we're talking about the human heart and what you and your team down there do for people, including someone very close to me. You installed, speaking of devices, you didn't put an artificial heart in. Sometimes when we're out, Nancy and I are out, my partner Nancy has got an LVAD, a left ventricular assist device installed by Dr. Kelpe and his team and saved her life. Can't no bones about that. That's the way it is. And does this almost, I don't want to say routinely, but does this routinely down at the U of A. And to me, this is a really, really amazing thing. And it's an amazing thing that people go in with these really sick hearts and they come out, ready to go to lunch at Bed Bath, at Beyond Bread and go shop at Bed Bath & Beyond and have a great time. It's a really, truly, truly amazing thing.
Just that little piece that you said is the essence of why we do things. Mm. And to give you back quality of life that you need. And I think that's the key. And if I didn't love it, I wouldn't do it. And I think that that's the same kind of ethic with the whole team who really feel that. So when somebody is really, really sick, and we do take, you know, this is a quaternary level of care. And, you know, the good thing between Banner and the University of Arizona when they merged, people were really worried, and people were leaving in droves, worrying what was going on. But the beautiful thing is that it needed a corporate enterprise to help push academia to create a hybrid entity which would allow us to do sophisticated work, which would have the backing that it needed in this new world. And for us to innovate, the pioneering tools are more molecular than they are coarse in terms of looking at things. So, I mean, the left ventricular, so let's talk about Nancy, for example.
Okay.
Nancy came in very, very sick. And, you know, people like her and there was a hockey player that I operated on have sudden cardiac arrest outside hospital. And you've got to have a toolkit which can cater to all of the, you know, different stratas of heart failure, whether it's acute or whether it's chronic. And you've got to be mindful of putting people's quality of life first and understanding what their human limits are. You have to be human about it. And also innovative. And as you know, I have a regenerative medicine lab. So I mean, I can tell you that when Nancy came in, we were going to, we were really going at full throttle on all of the medication to try to keep her heart going so that we could keep her kidneys perfused and brain perfused and her lungs perfused so that we could then operate on her safely.
Right.
One of the things that we did, which we specialize in, is doing these cases on a beating heart through a small incision on the left side of the chest rather than cracking the chest open. And that prevents you from getting more blood, giving blood products so you don't sensitize a person before they have transplant. And we did that with Nancy.
Yes, it was amazing. And that's in addition to everything else, in addition to the unit that you put in, the LVAD, the thing that keeps her blood flowing. And I think the way you did it allowed her to survive the operation. And so that's all these things work together. And I think, you know, I mean, I'm certainly no expert. I'm the guy interviewing the expert here. But putting all that together, the knowledge of the units, and like you say, the freedom to innovate. You put this pump, this little spinning unit in her heart that keeps her blood flowing, and did it in such a manner that that she couldn't, like you say, you didn't have to open her chest, and so it was survivable. One of the things I sort of want to get to is the this also works with you had while we were there was a case of sudden cardiac arrest in a young man. Can we talk about that?
There was a young guy who is a hockey player, which I think most people know. He's 26 and really no family history or anything. And I was sitting at home watching TV with my girls, and I got a call saying that there's a professional hockey player who's on the ice getting CPR. And, like, there's an ice rink in Arizona. that was unbelievable, first of all.
Sure.
And then as minutes passed, the gravity of everything really unfolded, and he had a ventricular fibrillation arrest, and he was having CPR and was taken to St. Mary's Hospital, and they asked me to come over because he was now bleeding from his mouth, and his kidneys were gone, his liver was gone, and they asked me if I could put him on an artificial heart and lung, which we it called extracorporeal, which is outside of the body, membrane oxygenation, which is an artificial lung and a heart with a pump.
I see.
So we got there after
Zane, I'm going to interrupt you and ask you to, just so we can get our levels a little higher, speak a little louder, please.
Yeah, sorry. We put this artificial heart and lung on him, and he, his organs were now being perfused, but his heart wasn't moving, and his heart needed to be decompressed, because when you put somebody on this device, blood goes round from, goes retrograde, which means backwards from its normal physiological flow.
I see.
But, so that means you really are tensing the heart even more. So for a couple of patients before, we had created a new procedure where we would, through the same small incision we did in ANSI, we went through the left chest and we popped a kind of like a, more or less like a hose pipe with fancy lumens in, which is just basically a fancy pipe into his left heart, and drained it from the blue blood that was coming from his lungs that weren't working into an artificial heart and lung device, and then back through the same hose pipe through a different partition in that hose pipe into and out of his aorta, which basically leads from the heart to the rest of the body, to give him a more physiologic flow. And about 20 minutes after we did that, his heart started beating. And so I think acting quickly on something that's hurting very badly can cause myocardial heart recovery. And I think that that was the key for Nancy and for him. Nancy had a pre-existing condition which people knew about, but it got acutely worse. So we did the same thing with a more durable device without an artificial lung on it. And with him, we did it with an artificial lung, which lasted only 5 days because it had recovered. That age difference between, and I won't tell what Nancy's age is, but between Nancy and Craig Cunningham, and also the sex differences as well as the age differences mean that there's a powerful play there with youth, and his recovery was remarkable in 5 days.
It really is. He was walking around the local news media was obviously he was a local sports star, so they were covering him pretty tightly. I mean, and this guy's walking around, and he was quite frankly gone, just came back in such a, and that's, and blood flow was what it's all about, and that's what you and your team provided, and the other guys at the other hospital. I want to make sure that we get to the other fascinating thing, and the other thing I got to keep repeating, this is healthcare in Arizona, guys. This is cutting edge stuff, available, if you get yourself down to Tucson anyway. But I want to talk about the stem cell thing. So you got these folks with failing hearts. You got this poor young man that went down on the ice. You got Nancy, who's a little older and had cardiomyopathy, heart failure. Have a couple names for it. Heart failure is probably a pretty good description of a heart that just is so thick and muscle-bound and just not putting out a lot of blood. And the patient is not doing very well. So one of the things, this regenerative, what do you want to call it, Zane? You want to call it Dr.
Well, I can tell you, in both situations, I'll kind of demystify it for you. How's that?
Right, thank you.
In Craig, it was acute scar. In Nancy, it was chronic scar. And so their hearts were stiff and were not moving and were unable to beat. So the question, which has always fascinated me, is how can we remodel that to get the heart beating again? Because, there's only about 4,000 heart transplants done in the world every year. That means that there's a limited supply. As technology is growing, we are getting to do more and more mechanical devices. But as we've learned, mechanical devices and just putting them in the heart in the acute situation can recover hearts, just like Craig's, which is now beating at normal capacity. Mm-hmm. But with Nancy's, which is chronic scar, I adjunct of kind of things to try to help it work. Now, you know, stem cells have been around for 20 years. Everybody's like smacking them into every organ and with every different flavor that you wish. And that's kind of, you know, so what to me. What's more interesting is what is the cocktail of the science that could be used, not just being a, you know, chef or a cook, but actually detailing the science, not the art of putting something into a heart muscle in an offloaded environment with a mechanical device to use that as a bridge to recovery. And I think in the acute setting with Craig and in the chronic setting with Nancy, Craig has already shown that, you know, in putting a mixture of growth factors, membranes, and very immunoprivileged cells, which have stem-like feel to it, can, in our lab, show the science is that cells remodel. The scar cells turn into good cells. But the muscle doesn't really grow. And we're thinking, why is that? Is it a change in bioenergy, which is what we're trying to uncover? And it seems that's what is happening. And the scar is softening up to the point where it's now contracting. So in Nancy, believe it or not, her heart is contracting. Remember when you saw me in the clinic last, she had a blood pressure and a pulse over on top of the device. So that's the exciting thing for me, to see that her heart contracting.
Exactly. It's doubled its output in the time that those cells have done their work and then done their repair.
And so what we're doing is we're looking at the waveform of the device and deriving a fudge factor to see what the wall of the heart's doing in terms of its squeeze. And then we're using artificial intelligence and machine learning to predict which patient will recover or not. And so that's the beauty of what we're doing in the hamlet called Tucson.
Well, that's it. I mean, we talked about talking to Zane Kelpie, a doctor from the College of Medicine at the University of Arizona this morning. We're talking about heart surgery available here in Arizona. We're talking about limited ventricular, left ventricular assist devices. We're talking about things you put in the heart to keep it going, both in we just talked about a case where it was a sudden cardiac issue, and another case, the case of someone close to me, and Nancy, hers built up over years and years into something that was threatening her life. And in both of these cases, the device bought them time, or is buying them time, to have some regeneration in her natural heart, and that seems, as you said, the scar tissue, taking bad tissue and turning it into working heart tissue again, which is just nothing short of amazing. So,
right. What about if we weren't to do that and get to that stage? What about if we were to just get a patient very early on, like when Nancy was first diagnosed? We could be able to, if she had a heart attack, put a patch on her heart with her own stem cells from her own heart, which would then do the repair, and you wouldn't need the device. That's what we're working on right now.
And then that's wonderful, because all that suffering, I'm looking at, you know, the amount of suffering she went through before she got your good assistance and the device, that had she been aware of, or had she been referred, and I guess this is sort of a not so veiled hint to GPs and whatnot in Arizona, to say, and part of what we're trying to do here is let people know that here in northern Arizona, wherever this station goes, that this is available, and it's available down south, and that these referrals. And I realize right now medicine is all about insurance and costs and things, but forgetting all that for a minute and finding what is available that is I mean, it's jaw dropping for some of us too. That where you guys are going with all of this hard.
Well, it's also bread and butter stuff. I mean, if we're doing bread and butter bypass surgery for simple heart disease, which is, you know, some of our daily bread and available anywhere, we're actually doing it with laser and adjunctive therapy with regenerative medicine. And we're trying to avoid going to the devices early on. And we are very soon going to be publishing our results about that, which is very exciting. But also, you know, why treat the scar at the chronic stage when we can get it at the early stage? And further to that, so we're building a recovery program for the heart, and that's where we're going to with people like Nancy.
I see.
And in people who have ischemic heart disease and even dilated cardiomyopathy, which is a, you know, very sick, burnt-out heart from, say, valve disease or even genetic diseases. Now, Craig Cunningham, young people like Craig who don't have a diagnosis of why they had sudden cardiac death and why only 5% of them actually live, and why only 1,000 people die of a sudden cardiac arrest every day.
Wow.
That's 360,000 people a year, which is more than breast cancer and AIDS deaths every year. Isn't that worrying?
Yeah.
So what about screening for that?
Well, that's,
well, one of the things that we're doing is we're actually working with a group of people where we're actually screening using a downloadable app on a watch to then predict using artificial intelligence and waveforms who may or may not be at risk. And that can, you know, like I'm worried about my kids growing up when they go and play soccer. You know, what's their trend been? Not just before the soccer game or during the soccer game, but after, like Craig Cunningham,
right,
in the cool-down period when, you know, your adrenaline levels are all up, you're pumped, you've just short of breath, and now your heart's sensitized to having an electrical abnormality or uncovering that. So, you know, it's scary.
We're talking to Dr. Zane Kelpie this morning from the University of Arizona College of Medicine at Banner down in Tucson. And we're talking about hearts and heart surgery and heart regeneration and as far as and just all the sort of space, I don't want to go space, but certainly cutting edge stuff here that's available in Arizona. Now, but we did mention this is Democratic Perspective, and while I'm doing the segue here, let's thank Democrats at the Red Rocks that throw a little money our way to help keep us on the air. We want to thank Steve Segner and his crew over at El Portal, a fine boutique hotel right here in Sedona that has been a strong supporter over the years. And but getting back to Dr. Kelpie, let's talk about the other side of healthcare. You got when I wander through the halls of the U of A Medical Center, it looks like a TV hospital. I mean, there's people everywhere. There's people coming and going. There's people in scrubs, and when I listen to you talk and your staff talk about patients you got this, to me, I've used the term, you have this sort of team of geniuses discussing all these different aspects of your case, and it seems such a an amazing place to me where that you have the staff and the freedom and money, or at least it doesn't, the cost of healthcare doesn't, it seems to be what it's all about. And yet, in this situation, the situation you work in, the bubble or whatever you guys want to call it, you've created down there, that's the least of the concerns. How does that happen? I mean, do you have an answer? Do you know why you're able to do what you do and not worry so much about whatever the whole rest of everybody else is worrying about?
No, you worry very much, and I think it's a unique environment, isn't it? I mean, it's also fueled by the creation of a hybrid enterprise. And yeah, I think the first thing is, you know, in my own bubble, with my own team, I think it's surrounding yourself with people who are more talented than you, much more intelligent than you, more expert than you. And I think you can learn. And I'm learning every day. One of the close people here that I banter with every day in terms of ideas of how we can innovate is the co-creator of the artificial heart, Richard Smith, who you've met. And, you know, he's a humbling guy.
Yeah.
And to meet somebody like that and to work and talk with him every day, I feel spoiled. And so I feel I'm learning something new. And on top of that, you know, one can't forget the amazing cardiologists here who stem from Jack Hilton's time to the new age young guns who are really fueling the Sava Heart Center, and which I'm an endowed chair. And so I think they have been fueling us. And what's cool about that banner is that we've got a network. It's not just one hospital anymore that, you know, the amazement of Jack Copeland would stem from. It's more standing on his shoulders and banner's shoulders by working with teams of people across the network with 28 hospitals.
Right.
And, you know, unfalteringly, Banner, you know, the vice president of transplant, Deb Maurer, and CEOs of all the hospitals, both from Peter Fine all the way down, you know, to our CEO, who's a sweetheart, Tom Dixon, who looks like Richard Branson, but I never tell him that. But he, he certainly doesn't act like him, but nor the accent. But he never said no to me. And my chief of cardiac, who's a brilliant chap, who's come in and a very humbling guy, very, very stoic chap, David Ball, you know, when he came here, you think that you have no autonomy, but in fact, I've got more autonomy because there's so much trust. And I have really good colleagues who I can talk to, bounce things off, and you're not an island. Nobody is. And everyone here has a significant piece to contribute in the life of a patient who's here to make that difference for them. And this is what makes this place worthwhile driving to every morning and you know, staying for the hours without feeling tired.
Yeah.
I think my wife will argue, but on that comment. But I think I love what I do, and I love where I am.
You
and
can do some
I think it really makes a difference. And
it really does.
I think we are, you know.
Let me back up a little bit and step back a little bit anyway, and hopefully, and I understand if you didn't prepare for this, but how many people are getting? Let's start with the LVAD, and let's talk about do people get artificial hearts on our let's talk about heart transplants first. Is there what's the deal with heart? What's the statistics on heart transplants?
Heart transplants are just not changing in terms of the number of donors that exist. And you know, people, so in my lab, I started off saying, hey, how about if I take a crap heart or a lung that can't be salvaged, can I recondition it to make it better? And then if I can, how, you know, what's the durability? And that really doesn't seem to work too well. And then I thought, okay, well, how about if we try to increase the donor pool by decellularizing that heart or lung, i.e. taking out, and we've published on this, taking out all its cells but just leaving the skeleton. So we've got this biofarm of skeletons of heart and lungs of humans and pigs in the lab. And what about I've got this biobank and Nancy's stem cells are sitting in my biobank. So what about if I take Nancy's stem cells and try to reseed that heart or lung? Right. Can I create a new one? And so we created bioreactor. But what we found was, and as you know me, Mike, I'm pretty impatient. I can't wait for 3 months for somebody's heart to regenerate in a bioreactor. I'm unfortunately a cardiac surgeon who needs instant gratification. And so I need to see immediate results. And so and sometimes the patients are so acute you can't wait. So what we are coming up with is hybrid ways to try to augment the function of a heart that's already there, to remodel it, to repair it, and recondition it to work efficiently in a safe environment with a machine. And that machine, hopefully in a couple of years, will be smarter with artificial intelligence to try to then say, you know, we can now sense that the heart, and also that device would be totally be implantable. Right now, you've got a device, like Nancy's got the device, and she's got this wire coming out of her into a you know, pack, which she's very artistically hidden from people, even from me at times, and is something which is now a very normal part of life. But why do we even need to have it if we can just implant it and have it completely hidden within you and use transcutaneous technology to charge the battery instead of having to plug it into a plug? And so that's where we're heading. And in the next 5 years, I think you'll see that for a lot of devices, because technology is moving that way. And I think for people who are older and who can't have that, I think having, you know, the smaller incision on the left side without the cracking of the chest, without many blood products, saving your kidneys, and doing a totally implantable thing would probably be the wave of the future, because the results right now for left ventricular assist devices are as good as 1 year survivals of a heart transplant.
Well, that said, it's this, and you're discussing the specifics, and it's fascinating, and also the statistics. You know, we belong to, and I understand that nobody has a need to do this. I don't expect anybody to do it. But looking at the support groups, the LVAD support groups, the LVAD warriors, they call themselves, and then you have the heart transplant, two or three, four heart transplant support groups on Facebook and on Instagram and all over social media, that you have these folks banding together, talking about their conditions, talking about their treatment, and where they are in just this kind of what you've been describing on an individual level, the device, and then but in this case, and in Nancy's case, and in Craig Cunningham's case, we got regeneration things going on, and I want to call it experimentation, but certainly innovation happening right here in Arizona, down at the College of Medicine, that I can say is a wonderful thing for people that have found themselves with some of these conditions.
Is nothing more powerful than the patient's voice. I can say whatever the hell I want, but it's always the patient that means more than what I can say. And I think that one has to be very mindful of. You know, yesterday I had a young guy who probably needs to get an artificial heart or a transplant. And I was in the clinic, the one that you and Nancy come to, but I have my 17-year-old girl who has a genetic disorder who has a total artificial heart. And she's just so fully colorful. She's now 4 months into having a heart, and she came in, you know, bouncing in, beautiful. And she said to me, "Do you mind if I go and talk to him?" And that changed his whole world. He went from being afraid to accepting and almost enlightened about what it means to have it as a patient, as a normal person.
Wow.
And so Nancy's voice, Craig's voice, Daniela's voice are powerful for patients who really need this. And I think that the early recognition of this, like in Nancy's case, is important. So I think the earlier somebody comes to me, the better chance they have of surviving. And I think that this is the important thing to understand.
Well, that's it.
I'll address these groups on Facebook is really important. So, yeah, get your voices out there.
Well, it is, and like I say, sharing information, and for that thing you've mentioned two or three times now that I want to mention once again, that the earlier the better. It does seem to be there's a mentality, certainly, among doctors and among patients that somehow you have to wait until you're sick, you know, really, really, really sick to be considering the kind of treatment that you offer down in Tucson. And what I'm hearing you say is just the opposite. Don't wait until you're really, really sick. If, you know, get the diagnosis, and once you have it, then let us look at it and see if then all these other techniques are even more effective, and certainly, and I have to admit, much less suffering on the patient's part before they get to you. A waiting room full of half alive people is not necessarily a thing that you want to have all the time.
Well, I mean, you know, what's also refreshing is having people who are recovered, who are on devices, who are stable, and have got their life back.
Exactly.
And Daniela said to me yesterday, "Do you mind if I go and do my victory lap in the ICU?" Like, feel free, go ahead. She just lit up the day of all those nurses who do so much. I mean, so many amazing things that go unrecognized in the ICU and on the floor, and that helped her get home. And so, those are the unsaid and unappreciated voices which really need to be, sung. And it doesn't take one person; it's a whole team that's of, from the person who's the medical assistant coming in to room you, to somebody who's actually, changing your bed, and to make sure you don't get an infection in the right way, and just that common courtesy of, that nod, that smile in the corridor when you pass them, is the human thing about why we do what we do, and why this is a good place to be.
It's all true. I have to admit, and you know how it is as a patient, you're kind of hypersensitive to everything, and not that I was a patient, but I certainly felt like a patient. I was with so close to a patient and all of those things. And I have the picture in my mind of everybody at your hospital that did exactly what you were saying, the nurses, the specialist, the pulmonary guy, the physician's assistant, everybody, the nurse supervisor, the charge nurse, everybody that.
And the thing that's unique, Mike, over here is that we've got engineers, run by.
And the engineers that were at your beck and call.
And the VAC coordinators who, the engineers are our secret sauce. I have to tell you that. Because, Eddie, Dom, Doug, Fat, those guys are the secret sauce, and Carla is kind of and Susie, who kind of that coordinator and MA, and Diane, all of them in the artificial heart department and in the transplant department with nurses there, transplant coordinators, are all at one, rowing in the same direction, thinking about you and what's going on, and they are the secret sauce for our success and for your success.
Yes.
And I think they're very, very unsung and unappreciated sometimes, because they're always in the background, and you wonder, why is everything moving so smoothly? And it's because of them, and it's that beautiful mix of personalities, which can be very colorful at times, and also very somber, and who do more than you would ever ask, and for me, are my secret source of my world. And
Carla is a force of nature, and Susie, we want to, there's like you say, there's a a lot of people that all go into the feeling of well-being, and after some of the expert stuff is done, then we have the stuff that's equally as important, and that the maintenance and keeping it going and keeping on an even keel and feeling good about it and all of that. So listen, are we going to trash Trump before we run out of time?
Why not?
We're not, okay. All right, very good. I did promise at the top of the show that we would take a political break, and there's just too much to say, and we only got about 3 minutes left, Doc, so let's, I want to say again, I'm talking to Dr. Zane Kelpe, from the College of Medicine at the University of Arizona Banner Hospital in Tucson. And he does what he does. He does cardiac stuff, and he does it in an amazing, amazing way. Got this cutting-edge stuff. He's got this incredible background, and he's applying it all to the patients of Arizona. And we're lucky to have him and his team down there. So, Doc, what's coming up? What do you got? What's around the corner?
I think it's really on the acute side. It's about building a very mobile, which we've had for about 20, 30 years, ECMO team, and looking at screening for sudden cardiac death, because that's, I think, where there's a big need, an unmet need. And I think, huge resources from, the political enterprises that exist, and God knows what way it's going to go, whether or not it's going to be Obamacare or not, but huge resources are needed for the research. It can't be a one-person show. Oftentimes, cancer takes everything, but heart failure is the cancer that we have that I have to deal with every day. That's under-recognized. And the American Heart Association is a strong lobbying group, but, I'm just a young gun with a little voice, and I haven't got an episode part to play in a big political enterprise. So, and I often don't like to. I do like to jibe it, but I do love the politics, and I hope to keep that out of how I look after patients, because I think that's important. Because no matter what color you are, no matter where you're from, and I grew up in the National Health Service in the UK.
Right.
And I feel that our vets are underserved, and I think that it feels like it's very rural to treat them the way we are, and they need to be getting the best quality of care as billionaires would get. And so if I can help with that delivery and be that conduit for it, with translating innovation into it the way I want and having my autonomy, I think we can only be happy, and I'll stay where I am.
That's great.
It's a beautiful place to be.
That's a beautiful statement, Doc. And what we're talking about here, an individual who, I don't want to say defies, but certainly operates in a manner that the controversies raging over cost, over insurance, over all these other things are not a part of his life. Other than at least a small part, and that everything else comes it comes up. Well, listen, folks, we want to make sure that we listen to our Democratic Perspective, 8:15 on Monday morning. This show will be available on our website, vvid.org. All our podcasts are available on our website at vvid.org. This show, so please go there and listen to this show. In a few days, it'll be up, or any of our past shows, bvid.org. Thank you.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.